Now, when Americans are asked how much they trust Congress, the news media, religious groups, and other civil institutions, there aren't a lot of winners. The public's trust in most of those groups has gone down over the years, but one of them has improved its standing and maintained a good reputation with the public. That's the U.S. Armed Forces. Our next guest says other institutions could learn from the military when it comes to establishing trust with the public. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there groups and institutions that you trust more than others? Has your faith in any of those dwindled over the years? Why is that? If the military stands out as particularly trustworthy in your mind, let us know why, or if not, why not? And what do you think it would take to build up more trust in government institutions, in the media, in business? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Ripley is a journalist and author of the forthcoming book, High Conflict, Why We Got Trapped and How We Get Out. Her recent piece for the website Comet is called The Mystery of Trust. Amanda, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Well, with this asterisk of the U.S. military, which we'll get to in a minute, you write that the story of trust in America is mostly a story of scarcity. Can you talk about how widespread this decline of trust has been?
Yeah, for some reason, this has been one of the most well-studied questions in history. So we know from multiple different research organizations, I counted four, there could be others, that survey the public regularly about its confidence in different public institutions and their leaders. And, you know, it's just down, 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 or at least flatlining for most institutions, from banks to church to Congress to newspapers to big business. Trust has been on the decline for decades, and that decline has accelerated recently.
What are some of the reasons behind that? And I'm sure there are a lot of arguments about the reasons behind that.
Yeah, it's trust is so interesting to me because it's something that we study in a lot of ways and yet really don't understand at all. So it's like this kind of a, you know, paradox. Like it's, we know it's super important. We talk about it a lot. And yet we don't really understand it. There's something ephemeral about it. So certainly some of the decline in trust has had to do with shifting norms over time as sort of institutions, traditions, organized religions, other things have become less all-powerful in our lives, or less powerful, I should say. Then there's more sort of questioning of those things. There's more open reporting on the failures of those institutions. And there's, I think, more of a sense that people are out for themselves. You know, whether that's true or not, there is really a sense, and this could have to do with, you know, lots of things, sort of free market economy, you know, reality TV, who knows? But there's this creeping sense that people are kind of, you know, not trying to serve the community or the public, but themselves. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but that does seem to have some percentage of it is true, the decline in trust. Some percentage of it is totally merited, right? And some percentage of it may not be, depending on the institution. So what those percentages are is a hard one to answer.
We'll dig more into those institutions that are struggling with trust. Let's get into that exception. The military, you say, has gone the opposite direction. Post-Vietnam, all these polls you mentioned show the military having very low trust. What has happened since then?
Yeah, this is like by far my most favorite kind of story to do, is like you take a really hard, wicked problem that's kind of depressing and see, are there any outliers, any exceptions, you know? And there is this great shining exception. So the only large institution that Americans trust more now than they did in 1981 is the U.S. military. So this is even after nearly two decades of costly, destructive wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the trust has not wavered. And like you said, it's not like it was always this way, which is what makes it even more mysterious and interesting. The low point for Americans' public trust in the military was in the early 1980s. So in 1980, only 28% of Americans said that they trusted the people running the military a great deal. So that's very low. And now is at 60%. So you know, on the one hand, you could say, well, that's because of Vietnam, you know, that was a fiasco. In 1980 was not that long after Vietnam ended. On the other hand, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan have not been walks in the park, and they've been extraordinarily expensive and costly in terms of blood and treasure, both here and in Iraq and Afghanistan. So it is a really interesting question. You know, how did this happen? How did the military go from being not trusted by the vast majority of people to being trusted even across party lines to some extent, which is unusual right now? And I have a few theories. It's hard to say for sure, but there are a few things that did happen between 1980 and now that seem to be important. But like I said, trust is mysterious. So I don't want to pretend that we know the answer.
Talking to Amanda Ripley, journalist and author, looking at trust in American institutions. It's gone down for just about all of them in the last few decades, except the U.S. military, where trust has gone up. Well, Amanda, one explanation you point to in your piece on Comment was the military as institutions and its leadership really tried to do things to restore trust. What did that look like?
Yeah, well, so a couple things happened. First, the draft went away, and we know that this mattered. It ended in 1973. It's hard to say, you know, why it increased trust, but it did seem to matter. And there's a couple different weird things at work there that seem a little bit contradictory. But on the one hand, you know, because there was no draft, the military was no longer a threat to people inside the United States, right? And people also knew less about it. So in 1950, more than one in every three men in America had served in the military. So they knew the good, the bad, the ugly about the military. And today it's more like one in eight men and one in 100 women. So most people do not have firsthand or even secondhand experience with the U.S. military, which makes it, in some ways you could say, well, that would make it harder to trust, right? Because it's more distance. On the other hand, it makes it harder to know. And because we're not close to interacting with the military day to day the way people are in other countries, it's easy to sort of believe the hype, right, about the thing. But I don't think that's the full story. I mean, the other thing that happened is that, as you said, you know, the military very intentionally went through a period of difficult, painful, controversial reform in the 1980s. So that was no accident that that happened during this low point of trust and culminated in something called the Goldwater-Nichols Act, which passed Congress in 1986. And there's just a bunch of things that happened to try to reckon with the fact that the military was no longer designed to do the things we needed. It was designed to do something else. And so it had to be updated, modernized, streamlined, operationally changed. And that's also true, I would say, of Congress or journalism or other institutions, that they are working right. They're working the way they were designed to work, but they no longer serve what we need, right? So it is encouraging in the sense that the military became more trusted by making itself more trustworthy. And that was a public process done through hearings in Congress. There was a lot of dissent within the military, as you might imagine, people who thought it was a terrible idea. There were a lot of things that did not get fixed in those reforms, particularly the expense of our military. But, you know, it's hopeful in the sense that, hey, look, sometimes things are not that complicated, right? If you want to be more trustworthy, you have to get more trustworthy. You have to do things that make people trust you more out in the open, which includes acknowledging the ways in which you may have failed in the past. There are three ingredients that most researchers agree have to do with, are sort of the building blocks of trust: ability, benevolence, and integrity, right? And so those are the three things that make people trust someone or something more or less. And so with the various reforms, including becoming an all-volunteer force, the military upped its ability, became more effective. This was particularly obvious with the first Gulf War, very effective by the measures of the time. And also, it seemed like there was integrity. You know, there was a alignment between what the military said it was about and what it actually did. That's particularly true when you have sacrifice, right? So if people are sacrificing something, as people in the military are, then it's easier to believe that they have good intentions, even in a skeptical time like the one we're living in.
Okay. How would we port those lessons from an institution like the military to an institution like Congress, which gets pretty low ratings for trust and other things? You know, when you've got really two sides there who have a hard time agreeing on anything, how would you institutionalize that kind of change?
Yeah, well, I have the same exact question. Okay, let's put this into action. Like, enough talk, right? Like, I feel like we have a real crisis in this country, right? Like, we need to figure out a way to rebuild trust in this country. So one of the things that I did for this piece was interview Seth Moulton, who is sort of unusual because he has recent experience in both extremes. So he went from serving in the most trusted large institution in America as a Marine deployed to Iraq to serving in Congress, the least trusted institution, as a Democrat representing Massachusetts. So he's currently in Congress now. And when we spoke, you know, I actually thought calling him up that he was going to say something like, well, you know, both institutions have good and bad and there's well-meaning people and, you know, it's misunderstood. I don't know why I thought that, but that's what I thought. I thought it would be really gray. But no, that's not what he said. What he said was, yes, there are huge differences between these institutions. He said, when you sign up for the Marine Corps, one of the first lessons you learn is you can fail a test or drop out of a run and they'll let you try again the next day. But if you lie about anything, you're out that afternoon. Trust is fundamental to the experience of being in the military, he said, and that's not the case in Congress. And it's a shame because trust should be fundamental to Congress and to all politics. So he really did say that, you know, this institution, Congress, the incentives are such that they don't actually support ability, benevolence, and integrity, right? They do other things. So the military is more trustworthy than Congress. It's not just our imagination, although certainly politicians have amplified, right, those feelings of distrust to serve their own ends at certain points. So the other thing he said, though, is that, you know, it's not inevitable. There are reforms we could make to Congress to make it fundamentally more trustworthy. So he talked about campaign finance reform. He talked about term limits. He talked about national service as an idea that Americans could have a common experience serving together like other countries have, which has come up many, many times in Congress, but not passed. You know, I would add to that things like ranked choice voting, which is where you get to vote for your top three favorite candidates instead of just one. So there's different things we know from other countries and from research make people heard, even if their candidate doesn't win, and make Congress and politicians more accountable to serving the public and not just having to fundraise and beat the other side, right? So right now, the system is doing what it's designed to do, and that design is no longer working.
We're talking to journalist Amanda Ripley right now about public trust in America's institutions, why it matters, and why the military has been able to keep, even build the public's trust when groups like Congress, the media, business, banks, and more have not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there institutions that have lost your trust over the years? Big business, elected government, the media? What can be done to build that trust back up? With Congress, we're focusing on that some. What, in your mind, would make it work better, would make it earn people's trust? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation. Get to your calls coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Amanda Ripley. Her latest piece for Comment looks at how institutions gain or lose public trust while the military has grown in trust while groups like Congress have not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering what the military can or will do in terms of maintaining their trust as more stories of how white supremacy has infiltrated the ranks, and what that will mean for the country and trust, and how the military, if they will address it, and what they can do to address that, to maintain that level of trust that they've earned.
Lisa, thanks for that call. And Amanda, you wrote that one of the many things the military did to try to build trust had to do with race and representation in its ranks. Is that still a battle they're fighting today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot at stake here. You know, you can lose trust very quickly, to the caller's point. We've seen this a couple of times recently. And I think the threat of having extremists in the military is not a new one for the United States, but certainly goes up and down as extremist movements increase. And right now we're going through an increase. So that is a real concern. There were moments during the breach of the Capitol on January 6th in the video where you could hear people reciting the oath that people take when they join the military. You know, that's frightening. And in their minds, perhaps they were thinking that they are defending the country, defending the Constitution, which they felt had been violated because they're listening to news and politicians who are telling falsehoods, right? Who are spreading propaganda. And so that's very frightening. And it's very frightening, I think, to a lot of military leaders and veterans and members, because they realize how much there is to lose. You know, on June 1st, authorities used pepper spray, tear gas, rubber ball grenades, and batons against U.S. citizens in Lafayette Square in front of the White House in D.C., where I live, clearing the mostly peaceful protesters before a presidential photo op, as people may remember. And there was an army general there. The nation's top military officer joined Trump on this, like, really cringeworthy walk through the park wearing combat fatigues. And so suddenly Americans got to see the U.S. military up close and threatening the way citizens in other countries sometimes have. And it was a real breach of trust. So the thing is, in their defense, the military's leaders do understand trust better than the leaders of many other organizations. That's a huge sweeping generalization. But as evidence, let me point out that 10 days later, that same general apologized. He said publicly, "I should not have been there as a commissioned uniformed officer. It was a mistake that I have learned from, and I sincerely hope we all have learned from. We who wear the cloth of our nation come from the people of our nation, and we must hold dear the principle of an apolitical military." So there is an awareness of this. That doesn't mean that there's not a problem. There is a problem. And there's a lot at stake because, you know, we look around now after that breach of the Capitol, what happened? We called in the military, right? We had, 15,000 guardsmen here in D.C., which is just a crazy number. So if we lose trust in the military, then it's unclear what we've got. But we also don't want to be naive about that trust.
Thanks for that call, Lisa. We'll go to Gary now in Tomahawk. Gary, hi.
Hi there. Hey, thanks for taking my call. A lot of what I look at is hidden agendas. And what I'm not getting from any of these kind of government agencies, if it be military, the Congress and such, as well as even media, that I don't get the facts. Instead, I get opinions and hidden agendas of individuals or corporations or groups. And I just love to hear the facts. And I think everyone would enjoy the facts so that we can make the choice of what is really happening.
Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Amanda, Gary, seeing facts overshadowed by opinions and agendas.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot, actually, particularly with regards to the news media, is there's this real sense that people have an agenda and they're not revealing what it is. And it's not a good one. Whatever it is, it's not serving the public. So I think some of that these institutions have to own, including my profession, right? So for not being transparent enough about our motivations, about how the public is manipulated, about how the business of media works. And there's in that failure to be transparent, you really open the door to a lot of misinformation and fear, right? So because there has been manipulation, there has been, sensationalism and clickbait and all these things are real. And then it becomes like it can get bigger, right? So politicians and other media outlets exploit that. And they say, they exaggerate it. And they say that reporters are, you know, out to destroy the country and they don't care about freedom and these kinds of things. So it opens the door to distrust. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. You know, I just had somebody I know on the right send me a bunch of tweets, you know, complaining about how the mainstream media doesn't follow important stories. And they were like tweets pulled from different things, all of which, you know, I could source back to mainstream media coverage. And it's not to say that he's, you know, an idiot. He's not, you know, it's just that once you have that level of distrust and once it is inflamed on purpose by media competitors and by politicians and pundits and platforms, then it really becomes like a slippery slope. You know, it's hard to get that trust back. And so I do think that the news media has to dramatically change what it does in order to be much more upfront about what our agenda is or what any reporter's agenda is or what the business side is and what our motivation is from one moment to the next.
In our last minute or so, Amanda, do you have thoughts for how individual people, individual Americans can help to try to rebuild trust amongst one another, regardless of what's going on in their institutions?
Rob, that is like, I actually think I should have, you know, focused more on that in the piece. Now that you say that, I'm thinking, man, that is so true. It's not just about how we distrust our institutions, right? Which is super important for sure. I mean, you can't function, as we have seen now. You can't function. You can't solve the problems that we could solve, that we all want to solve, that there's agreement on. You can't do it when there's this level of distrust. So it's really paralyzing. And it mirrors our distrust for one another, right? So this is really interesting. There's a lot of research on social trust. How do we feel like we can trust random strangers or our neighbors? And that too has gone down. One thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that we have seen those numbers go up in certain other countries, like the Netherlands is an example. So it can change over time. It's not the kind of thing that just goes down, 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 and never goes back up. But then to answer your question, you know, what could regular people do to increase trust? I mean, I think part of it begins with not inflaming the situation. So like I personally, just speaking for myself, I no longer repost, or I try not to repost or retweet or put things on Facebook that that just outrage people, that just enrage people, that are just designed to make me feel like I'm spreading around some pain or some shock, right? I feel like that's been done way too much. And I try to be much more personal in the way I talk, particularly on Facebook, and try to, in my work, share stories of people trying to solve problems, because that is happening all around us. We know this in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our churches. We know that there are good people trying to fix the problems that we're grappling with, and they don't always succeed, right?
We'll leave it there. Amanda, thanks as always for joining us. That's Amanda Ripley. Her new book coming out this year is High Conflict, Why We Got Trapped and How We Can Get Out, or How We Get Out. We'll talk about that later this year. We've been talking about trust. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.